when people asked me, I was, you know, first like confused. I'm like, like me, why can I even? And then I started, you know, having more and more conversations and got to know that actually anybody can do so. And that's when I started. And then I also talked about it. And I think that's really important. If you want to do business angel investments, talk about it, and then people will approach you straight away.
This is Female Business Angel Podcast,
your go-to destination if you're a business angel or would like to get into angel investing and don't know where to start.
Or if you just want to find out how we tick. We're Tina and Katja, both business angels from Berlin. Well, I'm a VC now. We will interview established female business angels about how they got started and how it is going, including all the best tips and tricks.
So get ready for some insider stories and personal empowering moments and revelations with these incredible women.
Welcome to this journey with us.
This is Female Business Angel Podcast. My name is Tina, and today I am so delighted to be speaking to Celine Flores-Villas. I've known her very personally on social media for ages because she covers in a really great, charming, and natural way all things business and innovation. She has built a pretty remarkable company in very short time and got into angel investing herself. So, Celine, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us. You must have a super, super busy schedule. We can't wait to hear about what you've built.
Hi, Celine. Okay. It's so nice to have you. You're pretty much unavoidable in Germany if you're active on LinkedIn or go to any tech conferences. And I'm a huge admirer of how you've managed to scale yourself, but let's talk about that later. So please introduce yourself. And I'm actually really excited to hear about how you got to where you are.
Thank you so much for the invitation. Yes, happy to be here. My name is Celine, as you just said. And I became an entrepreneur through social media, so to say. So about 4 years ago, I started to build my own account on LinkedIn to upload videos about innovation, business model innovation, all these kind of topics. And what happened over the last years was that more and more people approached me and asked me, hey, how have you built your account? Can you help me with my account? And how do I build a followership on LinkedIn? How do I create interesting content, even though the topic might be, I don't know, too techy or too geeky?
Screws.
So that others don't understand, like, how do I explain my stuff in a way that people understand what I'm saying, and how do I, you know, send my message out there? And this is how I started my own company, the People Branding Company. So it's all about people branding, as the name says. And we help entrepreneurs, CEOs, literally everybody who wants to get started on LinkedIn to build their personal brands. Yes, that's
but
what
you
I
have
do.
Like a properly big company then now, right?
Well, I founded the company around 1.5 years ago, maybe a little more now already. And we are 15 people in the company, and it's bootstrapped. So no capital, financed through the capital flow, which was exhausting, but it's working, and yeah, it's great. I really enjoy it. It's a cool
new task. Is it all you, or do you have some sort of co-founder?
No, it's actually all me. So I'm a single founder. Yes, I don't know why I've run down this path alone, but I did. And now the team, you know, now that with this team, it's fine, and the team is great. And I feel like I have, actually more than just one co-founder, since everybody in this team is so involved and engaged and helps wherever they can. So, we're in a good state, but with the first and second employee, I was sometimes really like overwhelmed by all these challenges. But now we're in a good state.
But that's amazing. I mean, to build by yourself 15 people in 1.5 years, that's really incredible. So something to be proud of, and definitely also something that you can share with other founders, right? Your experiences, and because it's hard hiring.
Yes, hiring. Actually, I never thought that hiring would become the bottleneck in my company, because we've got too many projects, we've got too many clients, we've got a waiting list, so we can't, you know, get new people or onboarded new clients onboarded until September now. And well, I don't have enough stuff to do all these things. So it's actually hiring what keeps me awake at night. Nothing else but that, yeah.
That's so awesome. That's really, I'm so happy to hear that. And despite this being about business angeling, so a lot of VC cases, I do admire totally all kind of bootstrap companies. And actually, most funds are bootstrapped.
Ah, yes.
Some people forget.
Yeah.
So as a fund manager, you're kind of bootstrapping as well.
Yeah.
We definitely are. We definitely are. We again discussed today whether it's time to get an office.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have one. So all the 15 professionals are working wherever in Germany, but we don't
really
have a headquarter or an office. Yeah, we are 100% remote company. So yeah, that's also quite interesting. And I actually built it that way before COVID. So it was not like COVID kicked in and then I decided to do it, but it was more sort of, I actually heard of a company already 3 or 4 years ago. It was a NOAA conference. which is this conference for startups and investors. And they've also got a team which is operating internationally. And they told me that they don't have an office. And already back then, like 3 or 4 years ago, I was so fascinated by the fact that it works remotely. And I just decided for myself, I don't want to go to an office. So yeah. I don't want anybody else to come either. And that's why I started it remote straight away. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's why we're struggling as well, because we don't like going to an office.
Yeah.
And we don't. And if you're around a lot and if you have lots of things to do, there's no, like,
I
it
won't
just
be able to
time.
Go. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Time we don't have.
Yeah. But we're really not talking about business angeling here, but how do you then, because I think there'll probably be some people listening that also have remote teams, how do you build your team then remotely? Do you do a lot of like offsites or?
Yes, we do a so-called workation. So it's an offsite which starts on Wednesday and it's always until Sunday. And we do it like 3 to 4 times a year. So every quarter, you could say.
That's quite regularly.
Yes, it is. And I think that's actually important. To be honest, not so much for myself, because I'm happy to, you know, care about my relationships and online. I'm fine with that. I'm more this sort of person who needs to be at the office all by myself and, you know, sort things out. But I feel like a lot of other people within my team, they are really craving for it at the end of the 3 months. So then I know, okay, it's time for vacation again.
Yeah, cool.
And I think what's most important for a remote team is already to choose the right people when hiring. And this is probably also why it's so hard for me right now to hire, because there are a lot of people who might have either the cultural fit or the fit in terms of skills. But for me, both are the same important, because if a person doesn't fit into our team setting and, you know, is not in the same flow and hasn't got the same attitudes and values, I know no matter how good they are from a technical skill perspective, I know it won't work out on the long term. So I'm really checking on both. And I think that's, that's why it also, when we go on a workation, it always feels like at the weekend, I told my team, well, going on a workation with you feels like Junggesellenabschied, so
because stag do.
Yes, it's more like a actual vacation with friends than it is with your, you know, office colleagues. So it's like, yeah, everybody is friends in our team as well. So I really need this cultural fit also, and this is, I think, why it works remotely so well, because we all fit together like a team and a
that's
friendship.
Nice.
Yeah,
that's great. That's really great. So let's get to our actual topic.
Yes.
Angel investing.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get into angel investing? I mean, obviously you already touched that you've had touch points with NOAA, which is all about investing. So you must have been quite close for a while, but yeah, tell me more.
I mean, definitely through my network, since of course on LinkedIn, I talk about innovation, about startups, about entrepreneurship. So, I have quite a good network within the founder network or a founder scene or ecosystem in Germany, whether it is in Berlin, but also in other regions like Munich, has got a really, you know, active ecosystem when it comes to startups as well. And I know a lot of founders, and I also know a lot of founders who are, serial entrepreneurs or who have done an exit already. And I watched their path, and I saw within the last years, I saw what they've been doing. And I realized that more and more founders who had exited their company became investors. And I saw this kind of phenomenon. The first one, it was actually through conversations when people also told me, hey, Celine, why aren't you investing in all these founders, you know, coming up being like, why didn't you invest yet? And yes, until that point, I didn't think about it. Also because I thought it's, I don't know, too complicated or just, you know, not for just people like you and I. I thought it's more institutional that you needed to have, I don't know, not a license, but I thought you needed more background and not anybody.
But to have a fund, you do need a license.
Yeah, well then, yes, but yeah, that was never my ambition. So but I didn't know, you know, that you could have just invest as a business angel. So when people asked me, I was, you know, first like confused. I'm like, why can I even? And then I started, you know, having more and more conversations and got to know that actually anybody can do so. And that's when I started. And then I also talked about it. And I think that's really important. If you want to do business angel investments, talk about it and then people will approach you straight away. So now that I did, you know, the first few things, really small tickets, but still I'm a little proud about it. So but since I talked about it, more and more startups come up and send me their pitch decks as well. So I also saw that this kind of, you know, making it visible on my account on LinkedIn, talking about it, drives more attention to the topic and then also brings in more pitch decks to my table. So I think that's really important for anybody out there who wants to get started. Talk about it, even though you didn't do anything yet, but just say, you know, I want to go into angel investing. Do a post on LinkedIn about it and people are going to approach you and this is going to lead to the next contact. And then, you know, you're kicking it off by yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. And this way, when I started angel investing, I remember I wrote a text message to a friend of mine who was going into the same deal I was saying, like, listen, do you think this is actually going to help me professionally to do this? And he's like, no way. But it like totally changed my life. So, so I think if you really use it, and I guess for you, it's actually like, for your business is beneficial. I think for a lot of people, it's beneficial for the business as well, for their actual work. because you do build really cool eye-to-eye relationships when you're in the same deal with someone. And
definitely, so, yes, yes. And that's
you usually have like team dinners and stuff, and you shouldn't ever do it just for that. But once you start building like this gang of people that you keep investing with, and it's so cool.
Yes, yes, it is. Yeah, I can just imagine. My journey just started, so I don't know yet, but I obviously hope for it, yes.
Yeah, and there's actually one thing I want to mirror. So you said, oh, I only do tiny tickets. That's like the right thing to do because like a lot of people that we speak to, a lot of people, they're like, yeah, biggest mistake I've made is my first big ticket was too big.
Oh, okay. So what is too big and when they're saying it?
I think it's like too big in the way that they put too much money in the company, so much that they felt it was really, really detrimental to their personal wealth if it didn't go well.
Oh, well, that's going to be me then in 3 years telling you.
No.
No, but I'm actually, yesterday I found out with the 16 personality tests that I'm an entrepreneur and a risk taker, you know? So
good.
This definitely reflects on my on my investment behavior because, yeah, well, as I said, I'm a risk taker. I'm going to leave it here, yeah.
No, but that's so good to be a risk taker. I like it. And I think it's something that's important that we, like, shout from the rooftops.
Yeah.
especially because, like, a lot of guys seem to think that women don't take risk.
Yeah. No, I took too much risk probably already, but
that's good. I take
that's
too much
another
risk
story.
So so now you get all this deal flow. How do you manage that?
Well, I haven't got a deal flow pipeline yet, like we do with our sales pipeline. Since it's something I started because I thought it's really interesting and mainly also because I wanted to learn about it. Since I talk a lot about all these topics on my LinkedIn channel, it was the same with building a company. I've been talking about startups all the time and I never built my own company. So this was also the same impulse I had back then. You know, if I talk about it on LinkedIn and my postings, I need to build my own company. Yes, exactly. First, you got to do it. And that's
put your money where your mouth is.
Yes. So that's the same with the angel investment. Investments. I actually started because I wanted to learn how to do it. And that's also why I haven't got a deal pipeline yet, because I won't be able to even make 10 deals a year. That's already too much for me. Like, I mean, 3 years ago, I was sitting on the bench in a university. I it's not like, you know, I'm super wealthy and I've got tons of, I don't know, tickets to do. So it's really something I did for learning and for the my personal development. And that's why I now did, I think, 4 or 5 deals already. And
see, that's a lot.
Yes, but that, this within the last 3 months. So for me, it's like, if I get into something, then I'm like, I'm hooked. It hit me and I was really into it. And well, I still am, but now I also told myself like, okay, so now calm down. So, okay, now I'll look at it and see how it goes and also talk to the startups and get to know, you know, how they are developing, because that's also something I want to bring in. So if I do too many deals as well, I also can't bring in anything else. And that's also not what I want. That's not the purpose of it. So I told myself, okay, let's keep it till here. This was like cool learning journey. And well, now I'm going to watch them carefully.
So this was one of my approaches when I started. I was like, okay, I'm not doing an MBA. I always wanted to do that. So I'm going to take that kind of amount and put it into it. That was my my thinking, because I thought like it has to have some sort of learning component. Otherwise, it's just too nerve-wracking.
Yes, it is. Yes. Yes. And also, I mean, some actually one deal didn't work out in the end. And that was also, I put in that deal, I put in most of my time, and I actually also, you know, got a lawyer. This was one of the few deals where I also got a lawyer on board to check my deal like specifically. And I, you know, in other deals, it was more like there were so many founders I knew well, and I, you know, called with the other angel investors and made sure everything was right by myself. But on other deals, when I felt like, no, I need my lawyer to have a look at it, I also did so. And I mean, that's also costly, you know, then you already invest 1, 2, 3 thousand euro only in the lawyer. And then in the end, it didn't work out. I put in time, I put in money, and it didn't work. I was so frustrated. So it's also not something that's, you know, easy going and here and there, there's a deal. So it's really time consuming. And yeah, that's, then of course it, well, I was really annoyed. Yeah, but that's part of it. That's part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, so is that what you would also say is like the worst thing, that you invest money, a time, and nothing comes back sometimes? What's
Yeah, I'd say that was probably the worst experience within this journey of being an angel investor. That was nerve-wracking, as you said. No, that was the worst experience. But other than that, well, there are a lot of highlights as well. Like, as I mentioned, the learning part, like learning about how to do it and all these terms and words and stuff I never heard a lot to learn there, huh? Yes, and especially because I didn't study, you know, economics or anything. I studied something like journalism, like so I'm from another world kind of, and to learn all these things was really interesting to me. And well, also what I find is the highlight is that you don't know where it's going. But as I said, I'm a risk taker and I enjoy this kind of roller coaster. But that's also nothing for everybody. I don't think everybody would enjoy this uncertainty, but I like it. I mean, if we knew everything, it would be boring, right? So
yes, for sure.
I think it's really, yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, cool. So what's the, in terms of your, the deals that you do get, how do you work through them, and what's kind of the craziest thing that you've seen? Kind of a fun story, and how do you process it, but also like maybe you have some fun stories.
Yes, well, one idea that they did not actually approach me, but I saw them in a pitch competition, and well, they won the pitch
competition. Of course, because you see a lot of pitch competitions.
Yes, exactly. And that's also my entry point a lot of times. Yeah.
Cool, yeah, that's great.
Yes, and that's maybe also interesting for others. I mean, how do you get these deals exactly? Like you said, of course, for me, one thing is my LinkedIn account. I mean, with, you know, 120,000 followers, there is a lot of attention on my account. And also, you know, a lot of people approach me. That's great. But actually, most of the deals I got, or most of the startups I got to know on another way. And sometimes they approach me, but because of different reasons. And then I found out they are, you know, raising capital. And I was like, oh, maybe I can already, you know, join in another, from another perspective or in another role as well. That was, for example, one case. And then, yes, as I said, all these startup events where I take place. And that's also an advice for everybody. Just go and join startup events and have a look at the teams.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as an angel investor, you do really, really, really early stage. And that's what I also love about it. So like, I won't, it wouldn't be fun for someone with like my, I don't know, mindset probably to do like series A, B, C. That's already, you know, that's so big and that's so certain and that's so boring to me. But I love this kind of early stage stuff where you really don't know where it's going. You're the first investor and you can really, you know, help the team with your input. And that's, I love that. So I actually take all these startup competitions where I'm, for example, hosting the event, which I still do a lot to host events and startup events. So all these competitions, I listen carefully as the host and then afterwards approach them. And that's also how I got to know a few startups. And when you were asking for like a crazy idea, well, I don't know if that's crazy, but they did, well, how shall I explain it? So they developed an algorithm to automate light shows at a club because on all these huge clubs, you know, from here in Munich, P1 to Bergheim to Las Vegas, wherever, they have in good clubs, they do have a light show guy, someone who controls the show and, you know, manages the light to, you know, go on and off to the beat. And they developed an algorithm, which is so obvious. Like, why did they have a person through it? Like, I didn't even get it. But it's actually like, if you take all these light shows, concerts, clubs, all this together, it's a huge market. And it's really been like what the hell? There are so many like different small things you can change. And that was in the end not a startup I invested in, but I thought like, wow, there's so much out there you can do and how you can change an industry or just a product, make it better, whatever it is. And that's so interesting to me.
Yeah, I think it's incredible when you go, sometimes when you see things like, yes, that is a big market.
Yeah. And I mean, also in terms of when they showed us the whole, when they were pitching and they told us about the solution, I was like, yeah, well, that's not a huge business case. And then they were actually showing the numbers and I was like, what the fuck? That's huge, guys. Like, well, not huge in terms of becoming a unicorn, but well, still like a good and big case since nobody in the music industry was approaching this topic. Yeah. And also then for me, it's never like, it's only the case they are presenting, but I'm always thinking, okay, but if you've got this AI, maybe you can not only control light shows with it, but what else can you control with this AI? Mm. And that's also something I love about angel investing, that you also can, you know, strategically advise the companies and sometimes not the case they present in the end is the case they are doing or they are, you know, earning their money with. So that's, I think that's just incredible.
Yeah. So if you've done 5 investments, probably 2 are going to end up with a completely different business model.
Yes. And one of the investments I did.
One of the investments I did, they started as a social media platform and not platform, but like, it's a while ago. So it was like a social media advertising optimization platform. And now they treat erectile dysfunctions.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So that's probably the most insane pivot I've seen.
Yes. That's crazy. Yes. And I think that's the most exciting part. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. So for you, so when you help founders, where do you feel do you add the most value?
Well, I think especially with my LinkedIn account, also with my contacts to journalists probably, since a lot of startups have good solutions, but they just don't get them out there since they are too complex or complicated or technical solutions. And, you know, they don't have maybe, or sometimes when it's really an early stage company, they have put all their, you know, efforts in the product, in the MVP, and they don't have someone for sales and marketing yet. So I think that's something where I can, you know, help and jump in since you know, a lot of journalists, but also then with my LinkedIn reach, post about them, tell the world what they are doing. And yes, with each post, you know, I generate around 50,000 views and that's a lot. So that's definitely something I always offer to bring in. And sometimes that's also something that's part of the deal. So I did already a few media for equity. Thank you very much. Media for equity deals as part of a deal where I invested. So it's not only media for equity, but it's a combination of equity plus media, which, you know, is also within the deal as a fixed part, which I think, yes, is a great way because besides that, of course, I can bring in my own advice and expertise and call and help them and bring in ideas. But that's what everyone does. And I think it's only fair that, you know, others only have money. And, well, I can offer reach as well. And if you buy a post on my account, it would also be like a ticket already. So, you know, why don't making it part of the deal? So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of different opinions on the sort of
for equity.
Yes, sweat equity or whatever you want to call it. And I think...
How do you think about it?
I think it's fine as long as you have clearly defined what it's for.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Because there are situations where you have, especially in the early days, like people like, oh yeah, but they did so much for us. And you're like, yeah, but what did they do? Well, they did this and that. But if there's like, look, we gave them the equivalent of a 5,000 or 10,000 euro ticket. And they did what usually they would charge pretty much the same for.
Yes.
And I'm like, yeah, fine. And this is something we really needed, and then it's fine.
Yes.
But if it's kind of, does someone, you know, sometimes some people kind of rip startups off, and I have like a complete allergy towards this. But I think if it's very clearly defined what the Leistung, what the the sweat against the equity is, I think it's totally fine.
Yes, and we also define it. Like I define how many posts per year I do. And then often we agree on the first two years in which I support them with postings. And we actually, you know, it's part of the deal, and we write it down in the contract as well. So
perfect.
That's, you know, a part of it. And what I feel like is fair, if you don't do only media for equity, but if you actually invest and you have this as an add-on, so it feels like you've actually got your own skin in the game as well. And that's also sometimes what founders want to see. But actually, I had also teams who said, no, we don't want to include it in the deal. And then, then it's up to me to say, okay, still, I believe in the idea and the team, and I only want to invest my money then. Or I say, well, no, then if you don't see the value in it, then you don't see the value in this, in this collaboration either. And then it doesn't make sense for me. So then that's really about, you know, the individual deal on how I decide as well. But
it's important that it makes sense for everyone and that everyone is really honest and upfront and it's all talked about. And that's why, like,
exactly.
If you can put it in contracts and all that, that's really great.
Yeah.
So if it's on that basis, I think it's perfectly great. So what's your like top advice for aspiring angel investors?
Well, yes, as I said, talk about it. Talk about when you want to do it or when you want to get started, just start talking about these things, and then more and more people will approach you. And this is obviously also how you approach me, right? I won't be in this podcast if I hadn't talked about what I do. So that's also how you spread the news, and maybe even through this podcast, other startups are going to approach me again. And I think that's how you get the deals going. And then in terms of anything else, I'd say, you know, learn it as you do it. I don't think you need to do any course. And actually, since I did the first investment, I got posts and letters to my company saying like, you're an angel investor now. Here's a course for angel investment. No, fuck that. I don't think you need to take a course. Just get started. And then if you have the first deal, and then you've got the first, you know, conversations. I mean, that's until then, it's pretty easy. I mean, and you can also, you know, look at the numbers, calculate, see whether it's a good case or not. And that's a little bit, you know, a little bit of math. But then you can, you know, also when it then comes to the actual, Verhandlung again, negotiation. Yeah, if you then, you know, have the first negotiations, then you can, you know, start approaching people like, other angel investors who already did it. And that's actually a cool hack. I didn't do it in the first two. I was not asking who are the other angel investors, but now that's always my first
always
question.
Do.
Yeah, but that's something I learned. You know, I did not talk to anybody about it. And I was like, just like, you know, doing it and helping myself somehow. And then this was one of the things I realized during the second deal. Oh no, I'm going to ask who the others are. I'm going to talk to them and ask them what kind of risks they see and what they think about the founders. And, you know, then it's so much easier.
The VCs do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was new to me. And that's really important.
And it's also very good to cover bases that you can't cover yourself, like legal. Mm-hmm. Like usually with angel investing, there's one angel that's done like 20 plus deals, yes, and they know the contracts.
Exactly.
Or the founders, they know the contracts. So even to just like cover like basic stuff that you don't know yourself or you don't understand yourself, it's really worth like connecting with the others.
Exactly. And that's why I also, the first deal or the first deals, I also brought in my own lawyer and then realized, no, I'm going to get in touch with the other angel investors, see how much experience they've got. One, for example, in the third case was institutional, kind of already, well, not like a VC, but like something in between. And then I was 100% sure that they knew the contract. And still then what I, for example, did is just write an email also, like something, a written piece of, I don't know, mail. I asked the founders, well, can you please confirm me within an email that it's the same contract for each angel investor?
That's so important.
That's also a hack for me. Like
that's a great tip. That's we actually do the same with our fund. We say like, can you please like
exactly
the main thing that's important. So when we send our so when we participate in rounds and we send the founders into they start drawing up the contracts with the lead investors, we always say like, listen, as long as we get pretty much the same rights as the lead investor, we're fine.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and that's also something. I mean, this is, for example, nothing someone told me, but that's just for me from a logical perspective. I thought like, well, all these really professional angels in there, have I got the same rights? I'm just going to let them confirm this for me to, you know, have a proof. And I also, what I then do is I save all these emails like in a folder so that you don't, you know, do these investments and then, I don't know, you're whatever, you set up a new email account and all these mails are gone. Like, make sure you have all this paper track, all this email track. And that's also what I do then in the end when everything is done. But that's actually a good tip maybe.
Yeah. Okay, so last question.
Yes.
What one thing would you like to change in the world?
Oh God, such a big question at the end. Okay, I need to think about this in a second.
Right now.
Well, right now it would probably be to stop the war in Ukraine and stabilize our whole world again.
Yes.
I think that's something that comes from all of our hearts, right? That's actually something that, you know, keeps me busy thinking about kind of every day. And that's something also that's, you know, that it's maybe also because it's so close, but that should not be the reason, to be honest. But I think it is in this case.
It gets closer to you. Yeah.
Yes. And still like we should care as much as, you know, as if it was somewhere else. But still, of course, that's something I think about. And eliminate all the ego from this world, because I think if there wouldn't be this ego of this one guy, okay, there's all this all these horrible things won't happen. So I think take out the ego, just everybody out there, and
nice.
Then we would probably have a better world, hopefully. That would be my wish, yes.
That would be great. Okay, well, thank you so much, Celine.
Thank you.
I hope to see you in person soon and give you a hug.
Thank you so much for your time, and it was a really great conversation.
It was a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.